and welcome to the True Grit Podcast, where we believe that personal growth and helping each other solve important problems is the best way to make the world a better place. I'm your host, Craig Couch, and every week it's my job to interview top performers and unlock the secrets of their success so that you and I can apply some of their thought patterns, daily rituals, and strategies to our own missions. My next guest is Lee Hargrave, a former rocket scientist and founder and owner of Fort Worth's premier health and fitness facility, EnduraLab. Through experience, multiple degrees, and certification, Lee has taken an analytical approach to take the guesswork out of better health and fitness. Lee believes that you should challenge yourself, and he takes his own advice. This year, for example, in 2021, he's challenged himself from trail running to taking on the toughest marathon in the U.S., which is the Leadville. Which they also have a mountain bike race that's brutal, a 48-hour event where he'll run 4 miles every 4 hours, and the world's first 50-mile rucking championship, and a 36-hour event in which he will climb the same vertical distance as Mount Everest. He'll complete these while running a local business, being an active father and husband, and that is some superhuman stuff. Lee created EnduraLab in 2011 and has taken it from a community running group to a world-class 7,000-square-foot training facility. Lee's unwavering commitment to growth and development has led to an extensive educational background with degrees in aeronautical engineering from the University of Illinois, mechanical engineering from the University of Texas at Arlington, and a master's in business administration from Indiana University. He's taken his analytical and inquisitive nature and applied it to the programming and biomechanical systems, biomechanical analysis and coaching of athletes. Today, Lee continues to push his fitness to the limits and surrounds himself with leaders in all facets of fitness. This has allowed him to do what he loves, guiding athletes to understand and increase the top end of their genetic potential. He's a hardworking visionary that will stop at nothing to make EnduraLab the best of the best. Lee, welcome to the True Grit Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Craig.
So I have a lot of athletes that listen to this show, and I know for sure that they're going to love our conversation. And a good jumping in point, I think, is, you know, I think one of the most useful parts of people's stories is when they make the decision to go all in. And you were getting a perfectly good paycheck from Lockheed Martin as a rocket scientist. How did you know it was time to take the plunge into entrepreneurship?
You know, for me, EnduraLab, I fell into EnduraLab. It was it really was the passion project of mine to bring a better style of endurance training to Fort Worth. I'm not from here, neither is my wife. And so when we got here, it was just something I felt was lacking. And so when I started EnduraLab, it was just a resource for anyone who wanted it. And as it grew and more demand came from that, you know, I had a pull from my runners who were wanting more. And then, I had a pull from my family and the steady paycheck. And we grew to a point where I had to make the plunge. I either had to give up EnduraLab or give up my day-to-day. And I finally convinced my wife to allow me to do EnduraLab.
Yeah, because it's a whole different conversation to have a paycheck coming from, you know, a huge company like Lockheed Martin to, you know, essentially eating what you kill. Very unsettling. So you're saying that was a little bit, was that a little more unsettling for your wife Isis than it was you, or was it, what was that like?
I would say so. I mean, coming from a very steady job, and I think everybody, you know, even my parents were like, I can't believe you went through so much college. You know, here you are, you've worked up, you've made all these promotions, and now you want, you know, for them it was, you want to run a gym. You know, so it's a completely different feel than, oh, you know, I want to change people's lives. Like, oh, you're just going to run a gym? You're an aeronautical engineer, now a gym owner. So there was a lot of people I had to convince.
Convince. Well, you know, and just doing some simple math, you have a 10-year-old, your business was 10 years old. So when you made this plunge, you had a baby on the ground.
Yeah, in fact, I thought it was a great time. You know, baby comes home. Let's start a business. You know, I had a little time to spare. And my wife will tell you that I love to be busy. So before, when she met me, I think I was training for a marathon and doing my MBA. We got married, you know, and I was going to go to law school. And my wife said, you can choose law school or you can choose having a family. Mm. And so I was like, let's do a family. But she didn't know I had EnduraLab on the back burner.
Wow. Well, I think one of the common threads with entrepreneurs is they like adventure. I was having breakfast at Righteous Foods with a buddy, fellow entrepreneur, and he's a new empty nester. And he did a very similar thing. And within the first 12 hours of his child leaving for college, his final child leaving for college, he and his wife got a puppy. So it's like
another project.
Another project. Yeah, it's totally normal. Well, I'd love to know what it's like running a business with your wife. And would you recommend it?
I mean, it's going to test your relationship. That's for sure. And it wasn't always great. When I started in EnduraLab, of course, Jack was just born. And so she was out. She was kind of in between things. She had worked for Lululemon. And then once Jack came, she was like, I want to be at home. And that was another pull too. Like, hey, you're going to give up this job. I want to be at home with our kids. How are you going to make this work? Mm-hmm. And so that was a very big thing. Now, once she kind of came back into the workforce, she only lasted in EnduraLab for a little bit and needed to do her own thing because Isis is 6 years younger than me. Mm-hmm. And so she was in a different career, state of her career than I was. And so once she started to do that, then it came full circle. So she started working back full time at EnduraLab last year, right before everybody shut down for COVID.
Yeah. Well, it's pretty typical to be married. You know, one person has got this adventuresome side. The other person's a little bit more reserved, you know, doesn't like risk as much. How are your business philosophies different and how are you aligning them?
She's been a huge part and she's a big reason the community is the way it is. She, you know, I'm more the technical side of things, you know, seeing the whole structure, seeing the business. Isis is the people person. So people will find that. And, you know, we both have obviously loved people because that's our job, but she definitely has more of the soft skills and I'm more on the business side of things for sure. I'm kind of the creator and the executor. Mm-hmm. She's a little bit of the dreamer.
Okay.
So it works out well.
She holds that visionary kind of standpoint and you're the systems guy. We'll get to that here in a little while for sure. So 10 years ago, this year, EnduraLab was launched. But before you did that, one of the things I admire about your story and your path, the one you just described, I think you said you started out as a resource. And I think I see a lot of entrepreneurs make the mistake of building something and hoping somebody will come. You did the opposite. Tell me about how you vetted the idea before you jumped in.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very good point, especially with people young in their career. I feel like we do a little bit of a disservice when we're just like, just find your passion and go for it. There's a lot more behind that. Like I had a ton of background before I even thought about launching and giving up. You know, I already had a career. And so everything that I learned, even in aeronautical engineering, through program management, my MBA, I use that day to day. You know, there are systems in place that I was, and I had a passion on the back end. And, you know, it was a really fun thing for me to have a full-time job and this passion that all of a sudden blew up. If I would have done it the opposite way, it would not have been as successful, mm-hmm. right? I probably would have flopped. I wouldn't have known what to do. But having all of that experience beforehand, then putting your passion into play, that worked out really well.
Well, from what I read, it seems like you used sort of an online blog or forum to light the fuse to EnduraLab. Tell me about how that went.
So, yeah, we created the EnduraLab, much like the Facebook.
yeah, theenduralab.com. Okay, got it.
Theenduralab.com. And it really was a resource, and I used a lot of localized people. I love the idea of staying local, and we had a lot of great resources, but nobody to tie it all together and align it towards one mission, and that was endurance sports at the time. Mm-hmm. So that's how it started. I met a lot of great people there, and then it started to generate this little bit of groundswell, and that really came to a peak once I started the run club at Lululemon.
And so but that was with ISIS. So ISIS was working for Lulu, and then you started the running club. Why do you think that got so much traction? What were the elements that caused that to work?
It was different. You know, I think that the whole idea of endurance at the time was just go low and slow and let's get into a group and you just ride. There was no community feel. When Lululemon enters the market, they open up a showroom, and the whole idea is for their employees to spend about 50% of the time in the showroom and 50% of the time out in the community, because they want to build that community. So they kind of had this community going, and I brought this fresh spin on how to train for endurance, which was an actual workout with intervals, and people really enjoy to kind of switch it up. And then they also saw, hey, I can perform a lot better, you know, with this just one weekly workout. So that kind of kicked off, and people started thinking, hey, there's more than one way to look at how to improve my overall fitness. This guy may know what he's talking about.
Well, good. You got him results. It's pretty awesome. So, you know, over the years, you know, you've built this cult following. I know a lot of people that are a part of your gym that are really a part of your tribe. And so I have a question about that. That's sort of one question for you and one question, you know, kind of how ISIS would answer it. So in the context of developing and building a tribe, like how to go about doing that. So how do you go about building this cult following? What is sort of, what is your perception of what ISIS's magic potion is for doing that?
I mean, she really cares.
That's the answer. Yeah. Wow. Where's that emotion coming from? I mean, it's a big deal to you.
Absolutely. I mean, excuse me, get a drink here. I mean, ISIS and I, we're not from here. We don't have family here. We didn't have family. And so, you know, we started this business, and these people are a family. And it's hard to talk about. I don't like talking about that part.
Yeah.
But it's, I mean, we have kids. We have basically grandparents in the gym. We have people who have watched our kids since they were babies. You know, they've seen us change their diapers. I mean, we care.
Yeah.
We care.
Yeah. Well, that's super cool. And that it sounds as if it is an overflow of the heart. That's magnetizing these people to come to your gym. I think it's a beautiful description. Thank you for the vulnerability there. Wow.
Yeah.
You and I both didn't expect that.
You have to be vulnerable to get people to trust you, right?
Yeah.
So, golly. You know, it is. So yeah, they're a huge part of our life. I mean, we built lifelong friends, and I mean, they are, when we say the EnduraLab people are our family, we mean it.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing that I've noticed is that people have had that are at your gym have had this identity shift. And I think it's a result of that family vibe that you guys have there. And it's really one of the key components to building, you know, a tribe like that is for people to really identify as EnduroLab members, which is, I think, is a real rarity. I mean, you're not going to get that anywhere else. So back to the, you know, building a tribe. I know because you're a systems guy. What are a few things that you've done to systemize the tribe? Because I know there's got to be structure behind the feeling as well.
Right. I mean, that's a hard thing to really pinpoint as far as structure goes, because I think on the structure side of things, it's about operations and delivering what our members come to expect. You know, on that side of things, it's what's in place to ensure that we write a handwritten birthday card to all of our members, you know, and all of our ex-members. You know, you may have gotten one, who knows? But when we have somebody in our system, they're never gone, right? We always are touching base, seeing how they are. And that's the ISIS part, right? She's the one that's reaching out. We're the ones kind of putting those systems into place, you know, whether that's our communication that we're putting out, member events that we're putting on, walk work last time, making sure those events are more efficient. How can we get more? And, you know, we saw a lot of that when COVID hit. How can we maintain a community at a time where there's no, you know, contact, physical contact? And so that was a huge thing for us. And we hit the ground rolling. Like we were shut down, I think exactly 30 days, 60 days. And we hit the ground running on day one with a awesome online community with lots of touch points. You know, we were talking to our members every day. So, I mean, it's just, those are the kind of systems. It's a standard, you know, what do our athletes expect and how can we deliver those results?
Oh, so cool. Well, you know, as you look around, there aren't really very many businesses out there that have this approach. Are there any case studies that you've kind of looked at or admired from afar, other businesses that do this well?
I mean, you're always going to look at the big customer service, right? That's really what we're into as customer service. I don't know if there's one particular case study per se. And, you know, Fort Worth's a different market. A lot of things, we were over in Dallas for just a bit before we even made the jump over to Fort Worth, and completely different way to reach people in both towns. So, you know, we have to take things and we throw them out there, and if they work, great. How can we make it better? If we throw something out there and it doesn't work, hey, let's throw that away. Or if we think it is a good idea, let's put it on the back burner and see how we make it better.
Well, I would imagine in the gym membership world, one of the goals is retention. My guess is that one of the best ways to help your clients keep coming back is to understand why people quit coming to a gym. What are the reasons and what are you doing about it?
Luckily, you know, one of our major ones is moving. You can't really do much about that except now we're online, you know. So some of our athletes who are, you know, moving because of a job, they can actually take EnduroLab with them, which is really cool. And they can bring that community with them because a lot of our online programs still have the ability for the members to chat within that program, which is awesome. Other than that, it's boredom, right? Mm-hmm. Finding a plateau, and with a lot of the fad fitness that comes around, usually if someone starts something, especially if they're not in shape, anything will work for 6 weeks. And that's true. You can go any gym that you want to go, and in 6 weeks, you'll get fitter. Now, after that 6 weeks, a lot of people hit a plateau because they're doing one thing, high intensity cardio, or, you know, one style of training. And so we understand that, and we're always switching it up, and we are constantly talking to our members. So what would you like to see? And then, you know, we're talking to our coaches, hey, where are our members struggling? And then we incorporate all of that into our programming. You know, our programming is not done at some corporate house. It's done right here, you know, where I'm sitting. And that is based off of feedback, based off of results, based off of what we feel is needed for our community.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd like to shift gears and talk a little bit about diet, because I know you've done tons of research and deep diving into that. You've watched people do all the crazy diets over the years. You've watched them succeed and fail. And I know you have lots of thoughts about that. You know, one of the, I'm sort of a pendulum guy, where I'll swing the pendulum really far, and then allow it to come back to find the balance. And one of the things I did, that sort of straddled 2019 and 2020 was, for 6 months, I was on a strict vegan diet. Because I watched the movie everybody else did, that inspired me to. I'm like, I'm going to give this a try. I know it's not going to hurt me. It could help me. I don't know. What was the name of that movie? Forget.
I know what you're talking about.
It was like a Netflix special. I forgot. Anyway, it was really cool, but it inspired me at that moment. I was like, okay, I'm going to try this. And I allowed the pendulum to swing, and, really, you know, spent a lot of time working out like I always do. I just did everything normally, just completely changed my diet. And I didn't really see much change. Not much happened. It pointed out that I am, in fact, okay with meat. like it doesn't bother me for whatever reason. But one thing I did figure out was that I had a slight allergy to milk. Because that's one of the things I eliminated dairy from my diet. And the reason I knew that is because I didn't have a mountain cedar blow up in January and February. So that layering of allergies was obvious to me. I tell you that story because I discovered, by allowing the pendulum to swing, and people do this all the time. They do the juice cleanses, which is another thing I've done before, where, you know, I'll go 30 days juice only and allow the pendulum to swing and that was back when I was cycling a lot. I was riding 10,000 miles a year, and Jennifer said I looked like I was in a concentration camp after that 30 days, because I was already super lean and fit, and I had lost like seven more pounds, and it was like I looked emaciated. But I just like to hear from you. I mean, I've done these crazy things along my path. I'd love to hear your philosophy, on the pendulum idea, and what you coach people to do.
Well, when you talk nutrition, the biggest diet advice is probably moderation and consistency. You know, those are two things that we really don't have much anymore. I am a big fan of experimenting, and, you know, just like you went vegan, I think everybody should try an elimination diet, and that gives you a really good picture of what kind of food allergies you might have. And there's tests, but those tests can often be completely wrong, because what they can often pick up is what you eat the most. And so, well, I've had athletes come in, you know, these endurance athletes. And they come in, they're like, yeah, I can't do gluten anymore. I'm like, okay, you know, here's what we can do for fueling. And they'll go out and they'll eat all these nut bars. I mean, if you're running and you're out there in the middle of a really big race and it's hot and you've got to eat like a really thick, dense bar of nuts, and it's just not fun. Okay. You're chewing, you know, you're so thirsty. You've probably been there.
Yeah.
It's not a fun place to be.
Terrible. And
later on, she discovered, I don't even have a gluten intolerance. You know, the allergy test was not even right. So a lot of the things that you can do on your own with like an elimination diet and then slowly reintroducing foods And they did this. Dallas and Melissa Hartwig started this with Whole 30. You know, and many people don't do that full program. You know, it's actually a 30-day elimination diet and a 30 to 60-day reintroduction. So you're trying a little different foods. You're seeing how you feel. You know, how are you sleeping? How are you feeling body-wise? Is there, you know, more mucus that you're dealing with? Obviously, that food is affecting you. Take it back out, start the cleanse again, and then reintroduce something else. That is a fantastic way to figure out what food is good for you. But again, it's, you know, usually not quick enough for most people.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's a slow process. And I accidentally found out that dairy was a problem for me. Like, that's exactly how I did it. So let's double click on the elimination diet process. Because I've never done a Whole 30. I go to Indigo Yoga and they do that thing every year, every January, I think they do it. But anyway, the elimination diet is basically eliminating probably carbohydrates, some dairy, meat. What is the elimination diet process specifically?
It depends on how deep you want to go. You know, like a Whole 30, you're going to get rid of anything refined. So the farther, the more hands that touch your food, usually the least it is for you. Like, I want the closest to nature I can get on my food. If you're eating so close to nature, I don't care what you're eating, you're probably doing pretty well. Like, my favorite thing is I've got a banana, you know, I'm eating in the office and like somebody comes out, I cannot believe you eat a banana. There's so much sugar in that. I go, you show me the person who is severely overweight just eating bananas, because I want to meet that person, right? The banana is not throwing off your diet. It's the Doritos and Diet Coke that you have in your cart, you know, that is throwing off your diet. So these elimination diets, if you want to go all the way down to autoimmune, you're probably taking out beef. You're only eating certain fish, maybe some lean turkey. You're taking out citrus. You're taking out nightshades, so like potatoes. You take out a ton, and then you slowly start working together. Like, people who have Hashimoto's, like a really big autoimmune issue, like if that is a true issue that you have, you've got to go on a severe elimination diet and then really slowly start introducing those back.
And the reintroduction phase, is that another 30 days? Let's say, for example, I'm doing this elimination process and it's time to reintroduce dairy, for example. What is a good amount of time to know that you're in the clear once you reintroduce?
2 to 3 days.
Oh, really?
2 to 3 days.
Oh, wow.
You'll notice instantly, you know, that's a long time. And even when you do dairy, it's not just dairy. Like, try a hard cheese, try milk, try a whey protein. You know, dairy is not, some people, a hard cheese will be fine. And then you throw in, you know, something like milk and it sends them over the edge.
Right.
So you can, even inside of those boundaries, you can find certain foods that you can live with and some you can't.
Right. Well, what is your favorite protein if it's not whey? Because whey used to be my favorite and I've eliminated it. Now I don't really have, because it was just delicious. Like, I could just hammer those shakes. They were so good. And then I've tried some of these vegan ones and it just tastes terrible. What's your go-to non-dairy protein powder?
I'd go with a collagen.
Oh.
Super simple, unflavored, and you can pour that right into a coffee, and you won't even, well, you'll barely taste it. I can tell when it's in there, but I'm a coffee snob. But you could take a scoop of collagen protein or 20 grams and put it in 16 ounces of coffee, and you don't even have to stir it. You just pour it in there, disappears.
What is collagen? It's awesome. What is collagen exactly? I don't really, I've heard of it.
Cartilage. Yeah. It is. So you can get it from any source. There's marine collagen. There's, you know, bovine collagen. So you can get it. People with a whey sensitivity, they don't have an issue with it usually. Vital Proteins makes a great collagen protein that we use a lot.
Awesome. Well, so in this world, there are all these you know, crazy diets that happen all the time. And the latest one is the fasting thing. What are your thoughts about the intermittent fasting craze? Is it loco, or is it does it have some merit?
It has merit to a degree. The great thing about fasting is it controls your calories. That's basically what it is. And it helps you get control of your insulin. Mm-hmm. So big fasting became really popular with medical overseeing, like type 2 diabetes, people who are severely obese. This idea of fasting really caught on because they had such great results. And I like to fast because a lot of times during the day, I do it. You know, I'm an early riser, which, you know, because we've had conversations about that. So I wake up 3:45, and if I have a glass of water and a coffee, I'm at the gym by, you know, 4:45, 5 o'clock, and then I start training. And it may be noon and somebody will be like, "Have you eaten?" I'm like, "Oh, no, I haven't eaten." Because it's not, food is, it doesn't have that power over me. Like, I need it. I'm going to die without it. And it's probably because I have done fasting. Mm-hmm. And for a while, you know, we like to experiment with stuff. I would never give you something I haven't asked myself to do, right? So ISIS comes up with this idea, hey, you do really good with a fasting window. Like, a standard fasting window is 16 hours, 8 hours is your eating window. Pretty simple to do if you eat an early dinner, okay? Because you're going to sleep off most of it. And if people want to fast, that's what I would advise. Eat an early dinner, sleep through the fast. You only have to make it till 10 in the morning, 12, you know, before you eat again. Pretty simple. If you cannot do that, I would reevaluate your relationship with food. Mm. But ISIS comes up with this idea. She's like, "I think you can do 30 hours. Of course, me being the guy that I am, I'm like, "Yeah, let's do it. Once a week, I'll do it twice a week."
You just want to, "Oh, you want once? I'll give you twice. 100%
yeah.
more.
Oh, you want me to do it once? Yeah. Three times." But what it does is it shifts. So we look at calories, and you can't cheat a calorie, right? Calories in is super important. I don't care if you do eat, you know, vegan, vegetarian, straight paleo, or if you're just eating, you know, frosted donuts. Calories matter. And so when you have a fast like that, you get to load your days around the fast with higher calorie eating. But so you take a week, and I like to look at, people often look at one day of calories, and that's a mistake because it's a defeating thing to think about when you miss your calories. Like, if you're tracking something and you really want to lose weight, and some guy gives you or lady gives you a, "Hey, you've got to hit 2000 calories and you miss it that day, it's off the rails. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people have that. I missed it. I'm just going to go off of it and I'll start it next week. When you look at a bigger picture, I've got weekly calories. What's one bad day? I'll make it up tomorrow. You know, it's a different mindset of how you go about this. And with fasting, you have to have that mindset. So 2 days of the week, I don't eat. Guess what? I get to eat 7 days of calories within 5 days. Now that's fun.
Yeah, right. For sure. That reminds me of, so I'm, that's funny. There's an element of metabolism also that's happening to me in my almost 50-year-old body. And it started slowing down at 40, and it's just been slowing down more and more. And like, I'll go down to the ranch once a month, and it's just, I mean, wheels off. There's beer, there's chips, there's just homemade cookies. There's just all the stuff for a 3-day period. And back in my late 30s, early 40s, I'd snap back in 48 hours. And now it takes me a week to recover.
Now, metabolism is funny though, because you're not going to like what I say, but your metabolism hasn't slowed down. You've slowed down. All right. So metabolism doesn't really change that much. But what happens is as you know, after 30, after 40, especially, we start losing muscle mass. That's a big engine. All right. And if we don't strength train, and I'm talking about like serious strength training, not a 20-minute kind of body weight, which is good, but in the grand scheme of things, if I'm not trying to maintain or build lean muscle, what happens is my body weight may stay the same, but my ratios of muscle mass to fat shift.
Mm.
Okay, so now I'm sitting at the same weight, but I've got less muscle mass. Well, fat doesn't burn as much. So
that makes me skinny. Are you calling me skinny fat right now?
Yeah, that's what I'm calling you right now.
That's it. That's exactly what's happening. You've described it. And, you know, Lee, honestly, I really struggle with the weightlifting thing a lot. Like, I just want to do bodyweight stuff, like, and just ride my bike as hard and fast as I can. But that's not true. I want to ride my bike and have fun and then get anaerobic every once in a while. But I'm finding over time that ain't working. Because the way my body looks is different than it looked when I was 38 compared to 48, for sure. And that was back in the CrossFit days, and I was tearing myself up. You know, once again, it's a damn, you know, pendulum swing where, yep, you know, I did 42 kipping pull-ups in a row on my 38th birthday.
How were those hands afterwards?
Well, my kids started calling. They wouldn't even let me touch them because I had flappers. They call them flappers, where my hands, the palms of my hands would have these kind of quarter-sized flappers all the time. They're like, don't touch me, Dad. You've got a flapper. And so, but now I'm not getting it done anymore, and it's because I'm not lifting weight. I'm struggling with that so much. I don't want to hear that news is what I'm telling you.
I know. No one likes that one. They never like my alcohol talk either, but it's just the way it is. And if you look at the grand scheme of things, like what you have kids, right? Mm-hmm. And I have young kids. So they are constantly running around, moving, even when they're sitting watching anything or at the dinner table, they're fidgeting, right? They're constantly moving. What do? We like sink into the couch. It's like a deep imprint when you get out of it, you're peeling yourself off.
Yeah, exactly.
But hey, I gave it my all for a 20-minute CrossFit workout today, so I'm feeling pretty good. 20 minutes of movement, you know? We've got to shift that. We've got to get up and move. And a lot of times when you look at nutrition, they're going to pull some, go to some tribe in some far off island, and they're going to look at what they're eating. But the one thing that they always miss is those people are doing physical labor every day because it's a way of life. And we do not. We love comfort. Mm-hmm. You know, we do not want to get uncomfortable. You don't want to get out of your comfort zone of going on your bike and doing some bodyweight exercises, because weight training is uncomfortable for you.
Yes, totally. Like I'd much rather do a lot of other things. So you're right. It's a discomfort thing. And I think it's, I also think there's something going on with my mind emotionally. Like, and I was thinking about your day-to-day life and the conversations that you have, on the regular. And there's a good chance that you're acting as almost as a therapist in a lot of ways, is my guess, because people, you know, we all have emotional baggage and we deal with it in different ways. Some of my darkest times in my life, I didn't have a food issue. I had a cycling issue, where, I mean, I would pee blood after races, like, and just go into this deep pain cave because it was the only thing that outweighed the other pain in my life. But you know, it doesn't seem fair that other people that are struggling emotionally, like to eat. And so they're walking around really overweight and everybody can see it. Which isn't fair, because it's like, you know, we all have these emotional issues. Mine was hidden. Mine are hidden compared to someone that's struggling with their weight. And so I'd like to hear, what are some of the first steps that you take when a new member comes to you that needs to lose 50 pounds? Tell me about that conversation.
Well, a lot of people want big changes. And the first conversation that we have is, do you want something that's quick or do you want something that's sustainable? And that tells me what the person is like. I'd rather work with the sustainable person 99 times out of 100 because the quick change is the magic pill, right? Everybody's looking for that magic pill. Person who tells me, hey, I just want to make some small changes that are sustainable, they're telling me I'm willing to grit this out, right? I'm going to make these small tweaks because it's crazy what you can do. And it's just a little bit of a mind shift. You know, I'll have somebody, they'll come in and we ask for, hey, let's just describe a day of food. And I don't care what you eat. In fact, the worse it is, I'm kind of into it. Like, ooh, man, you had how many Oreos did you have? Like, were they the double stuff? Were they the mega stuff?
Were they chilled? Yeah, those are awesome. Yeah. Were they room temperature or were they in the fridge?
Yeah. Did you put them in the freezer? Because And so, you know, we'll go through a day and I'll never forget. I had a person getting ready for their wedding and they're telling me all this stuff and it's pizza and Cheetos. But I just see, hey, every day you're going to Starbucks, what do you get? I get the green tea and, you know, whatever sandwich. I go, well, can you get the green tea without the sweetener? They're like, there's no sweetener. I'm like, they put 4 pumps of sugar, liquid sugar, in every green tea that you get. Can you just order it without sugar? They're like, yeah. What else? That's it. I just need you to take that out.
Wow.
And a small shift like that, they start seeing results. And then they're ready for the next small one. But if you do too much too fast, you'll never maintain it. And that's why there are yo-yo diets, right? You go see someone, they lose 20 pounds, they put back 30 because they create these huge changes that are not sustainable. And it is real small things. Hey, I want you to stop doing the sweetener in your green tea, and I want you to go on a 10-minute walk when you wake up in the morning. That's it. That's all you need to do. And then come in here and see me and we're going to talk about how it's going. Simple, simple changes.
I love that. Incremental, sustainable changes become this lead domino and much more effective than my pendulum approach of extremes.
Well, yeah, I mean, but you've gotten some good stuff out of it.
Yeah.
Like you said, you get a swing, right?
Yeah, totally. You get a swing. Like people are, why are you doing that? I'm like, why are you a vegan, Craig? I get that. Like they just kind of with a little bit of disdain. I don't know why, but I got these vibes from people. What? You're a vegan now? What's next? I'm like, yeah. And they're like, well, why are you doing it? I'm like, I just want to see what's going to happen. I don't know. I'm just going to test it and see what happens. I have no idea.
You know? Beside religion and politics, like nutrition, people get so offended about that. You know, I mean, really offended. Why are you doing that? That's stupid. And I grew up on a grain farm and I went paleo. And of course, my parents are like, did we not raise you good enough? Is that why? I'm like, Mom, like, I'm trying this out. Like, I definitely respect what we did as to earn a living, but I want to try this out and see if, you know, what's right and what's wrong for me.
It's hilarious.
Luckily I can eat grain. So
like in my family's eyes, I'm in this certain bucket. Like they put me in a bucket where they're like, okay, well, you know, who knows what Craig can eat or what he can't eat. And so they'll kind of like with a little bit of resentment, like, you know, we're having this, Craig, you know, you're on your own. I mean, you know,
I don't know what you brought, but this is what we're going to eat.
Okay. So I do want to talk about weight training some. So is it the duration of the weight? Is it the amount of weight? What would be your advice for a 40-something guy that's feeling like he needs to lift weights? It just, it's truly the last thing I want to do. So I guess I want you to explain to me why it should be really important to me.
So yeah, it depends on where you're at and what your goals are at. So
well, let me tell you. Yeah, I'm just going to tell you directly. So I want to be as lean as possible and as flexible as possible and strong enough. Because in my CrossFit days, I could move a lot of weight. I could do pretty amazing things, but it's like I'm thinking to myself, why the hell do I want to be able to pick up that much weight? You know, these days I'm like, if it's real heavy, I'm going to hire it out and have somebody else move it. What'd you say?
Thumbtack. Yeah. Use that app?
Oh, yeah, you could totally use
that. The handyman app. That's all you need.
That's it. Well, so what do you say to those ideas? And how do I decide what to do next? Because I want to be I don't want to be bulkier. I just want to be svelte and lean and very supple. And I am supple. And I am lean, but I'm absolutely feeling that shift of muscle mass. My muscle mass is going away because I'm not riding my bike as hard as I used to. So I'm noticing that happen. And unfortunately, it is. I'm with you. It's weights. So tell me what would be the plan?
Well, number one, strength training is about, I want you as strong as possible, as light as possible. It does not make sense to me to put on weight unless you can move better. Okay. And that's a real hard shift for a lot of people to think about, whether you're an endurance athlete. And then a lot of my female athletes have an issue with that. Like, hey, I'm going to tell you that your body is going to change and you might add a little bit of volume in certain areas, but you're going to move better. You're going to feel better and you're going to perform better. That's a shift for people because a lot of people just look at the scale. So for you, knowing that you're an endurance athlete, I'm going to actually take you a little bit higher than I would other athletes. And people are scared about heavy weight and mass gain. That's not true. In fact, if I have a high schooler that comes in and they're like, hey, I want to put some mass on, I'm actually going to go about 50 to 60% of their one rep max, so the heaviest weight they can lift one time. And we're going to do so much volume, it's going to make them sick. They're going to be in the gym 2 hours a day. They're going to be eating, sleeping. That's what they need to do. For someone who's looking for you, especially like I just turned 40. So I'm kind of getting into this style of training in which I'm trying to get as much growth hormone and testosterone response as I can get, because we don't produce that anymore or as much anymore. So I'm looking for you 5 to 8 rep range. We're going to go real heavy as we can in that. And when I say as heavy as we can, your form better be perfect. And you're always going to have reps in the tank. It is a different mindset than this. All you can do as fast as you can. I don't care what your form looks like as long as you get the weight up. This is perfect form, under control. And, you know, you have a few reps in the tank. That's important. Never go to failure. Why do that? Unless I'm asking you to do one number, right? We're doing a test or something. Other than that, when you're training, you don't have to go to failure. You're going to do short rests in between that. And then on the other end of it, that's your strength sets. We'll probably do like 4 to 5 sets of that for you. And we're going to do big compound movements like the squat. I like front squats for cyclists because we get a little bit more into the quads and it's a little bit safer of a bar to ditch if you ever get in a bad position. Deadlifts, which people are deathly scared of, but I love deadlifts. And then bench press, overhead, bent over rows, movements like that. Nothing complicated, no power movements. We might get into some power cleans. Possibly, but you can build power a lot of different ways. And those kind of high skill movements, if you want to compete in a high skilled lifting event, by all means, you need to be doing them. At 40, even at 30, even after college, like you don't have to do those types of movements to get results, you know, and that was, people want the toughest thing you can throw at them, right? That's what sells. So if I have a highly technical lift, people are like, oh my gosh, I've got to learn how to do that. I'll be super fit. Well, I can probably get you just as fit by walking and lifting weight slowly, you know? So after we get your strength set, you would do stuff like high intensity. And when I talk about high intensity, I mean your peak effort for, let's say 20 seconds with long recoveries. We might do 8 to 10 of those, and then we'd finish up with some accessory work dealing with balance. So a lot of people need balance work side to side. It helps improve coordination. The biggest risk for you at 50 now, or there, is falling. So if you had a twin and you're both 52 and you walk by each other and one twin says, hey man, I've got brain cancer. I'm like, man, I don't know what you're going to do. And you walk away and you trip over a curb and fall, your mortality rate just got higher than theirs because of everything that comes with the fall, right? It's crazy. And so a high endurance athlete, like a cyclist who is not loading. So a runner is a little bit different. When you're cycling, you're not loading the structure, the bones. So the level of osteopenia and osteoporosis in male cyclists goes up.
Really?
Your likelihood of getting that.
Wow.
So you need loading. Bone is living tissue. You know, I had a 65-year-old that came to me. She's one of my favorite clients of all times. She had osteopenia, had a lot of medical issues that she was dealing with at the time. We started her off single leg deadlift, just single leg balance, walking, working on balance, making sure, you know, she was stable. Within a couple of years, she was deadlifting 205 pounds for 5 times.
Oh,
she completely reversed osteopenia. She goes to Mayo Clinic every year for a checkup, and they're shocked. And they're like, what did you do? She strength trained, you know, she stopped being scared about things that, you know, people always say weightlifting is dangerous. And there's a quote that's like, if you think weightlifting is dangerous, try being weak is dangerous, right? Cause that's when you're going to get injured, you know, and that's, and quality of life, super important to me. I've got young kids, you know, I want to be as strong as possible when those kids grow up. When I have grandkids, you know, my quality of life, I want to be high. I don't want to be looking at a set of stairs and saying, I can't go upstairs and play with my grandkids. You know, that's a huge thing for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. Like I want to be able to, you know, jump on the floor with the grandkids when the time comes and not even think
get back
about,
up.
Yeah, get right back up. No problem. That is truly my goal. Well, thank you for that. That's so helpful to me. And it's just what I need to do for sure.
Yeah.
And I've never been a member of your gym, just so you know. I've been there once or twice. But I've never, I'm going to come check it out for sure because I need some help because I it's been so long since I did CrossFit and I really didn't get good form training and, you know, I need somebody to show me how to deadlift properly so I don't hurt myself. And by the way,
absolutely.
Speaking of, you said something I thought was really cool. I forgot how you put it, but you just basically said you're really going for lowest like physical scale weight to strength ratio is kind of what you're going
strength
for.
Strength to weight.
Strength to weight. Okay. So how much do you weigh?
I weigh about 175 right now.
Okay. You're just like me. And what do you deadlift?
Lately, like 425, 435.
Okay. That's a lot.
Yeah, I think everybody should be able to deadlift twice their body weight.
Two times body
males.
Weight. Okay.
That's a gold standard that we hold at the gym.
Mm-hmm.
For a while there, I was 2.5 times body weight, pretty close to that now.
Mm-hmm.
But that's good. And then we have relative terms for bench press, back squat, all of those as well. So,
what is the bench press? I don't have a good bench press. I know that for sure. What is the
1.5?
1.5 for bench, and then what was the other one?
I mean, back squat, you're at like 1.75. Front squat, 1.25 to 1.5. I'd love to see you put your body weight overhead. That tells me you have healthy shoulders, which is one of the most injured joints of the body.
Yeah.
Yeah. As a cyclist, I know you don't.
No, it's terrible. Just,
it's the inherent form of how you are on the bike.
Oh, yeah.
You're not doing a lot of pulling. Mm-mm. It's leg heavy. So, yeah. Your shoulders are shot.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Well, okay. Enough about me.
no, come on. Let's
move on. Yeah, when I was peak condition as a cyclist, my arms looked like a 10-year-old. I mean, it was pretty bad.
That's wasted weight, right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, that's what they say. Yeah. Okay, so I want to switch gears and talk about sleep hygiene. You and I did a speaking event together years ago, and you had some really insightful, interesting things to say about sleep and sleep hygiene. Tell me how you prepare yourself for sleep every night. What are some of the rules that you have in place for yourself and sort of the boundaries that you set before you go to bed?
Yeah, it's a great question. Sleep is most undervalued recovery tool for everyone. And I just want people to go out there and look at what lack of sleep or sleep deprivation does to you, because if you want to prevent things like cardiovascular inflammatory, Alzheimer's, are linking it to Alzheimer's anymore. If you actually want to lose weight, if you want to feel better, I don't know if you have kids, you understand when they don't get a good night of sleep, they're a little bit cranky, and so are we. So as far as sleep hygiene goes, yeah, there's a few steps that we talk about with our clients about preparing to sleep, because it's so important. Number one is you start avoiding caffeine about 10 hours before bedtime.
Wow.
That's a huge one.
Wow. 10 hours.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because if you need caffeine 10 hours before bedtime, you're probably a little sleep deprived, I'm guessing. You know, but yeah, so you still have it's a stimulant and it's still in your system usually about 10 hours. Now, some people are a little bit faster at metabolizing caffeine than others, but that's just the general rule of thumb. So usually people should not have it, especially after lunch. And then create a routine. I'm a big, and we've talked about this till I'm blue in the face, about routines. Like, I should stop calling routines and start calling rituals. Like, that's what you want. Like, these are things that you do not skip. And when people are like, what do you mean a routine? I'm like, do you forget to brush your teeth when you leave in the morning? That's a routine. That's a ritual. This is the same kind of thing I'm talking about before bed. So I have a ritual. You know, I set all of my stuff up for the next day because I am such an early riser. Not everyone in my household is up at that time. So my clothes are laid out. My espresso machine is set up and ready to go. Like, I don't have to think in the morning. And the less you have to think, the more important decisions for me I can make later on the day. And my morning just goes smooth. And there's a quote that I love, and it's, lose an hour in the morning, you'll spend the rest of the day looking for it. You never get the time back. So set yourself up for success. I do that at night. Cool and dark bedroom. So this is a hard one for people. We don't have a TV in our bedroom. That's one of the biggest things. And no animals. So no dogs sleeping with you, because they will move around. And even though you think that you need them, you will sleep better without them. And then that cold and dark, I mean, we're talking cold, like 60 to 67 degrees. Yeah.
That's really cold. Oh my gosh.
Like, what do you sleep at? Where do you put your temperature at night?
Probably 70, something like that.
See, we love 65.
Wow. That's like a meat locker, man. when you're sleeping at 65, do you have like big old blankets, or are you just like top sheet shivering?
No, we have a sheet and a blanket, yeah.
Yeah. I feel like I'd catch a cold if I set it down that low. I guess in the wintertime, you just open the windows, huh?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we might be upstairs and the heater's running downstairs and the upstairs AC is going because the, you know, the difference mm-hmm. is too much. We'll have it. But yeah. And then in the morning, usually when I leave, I'll turn it up a little bit. So it makes it a little bit easier for everyone else to get out of bed. Mm-hmm. And then dark, like blackout curtains, no electronics. Like I said, that's a huge help. A dark room. Like when you get out of bed, I want you feeling the edge of the bed to get to wherever you're going, that dark.
Wow. Yeah.
Big meals and alcohol 3 hours before. So don't go eat yourself, you know, a whole Pizza Hut pizza and a six pack of beer and then try to go to bed. Never a good combo. Invest in your bedroom. That's another step we talk about. The mattress, like if you're actually sleeping 8 hours a day, you spend a third of your day on your bed. Spend some money and get the right bed. Do not go cheap here or be sleeping on a 20-year-old mattress because you're just too lazy to go get another one. Get a good mattress. Okay. That's like huge.
Are you a memory foam guy?
Yeah, I like memory foam.
I love
it. I've tested almost like every bed in the box, you know.
And which one's your favorite?
Right now, I like the Nectar.
The Nectar. Oh, I think yeah. I've heard, seen some ads about that. I have one that I got from Costco, and that thing, I just get giddy when I get in it every night. It's so awesome. I bought it like 10 years ago. It's so good. I just get all giddy. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
Like this bed like is so good.
If you're tossing and turning at night, a lot of times it's a mattress.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Well, do you have other thoughts?
Oh, yeah. And then no screen time.
That's
the one that's going to get move. No screen time an hour before and then move throughout the day. Because if you're not being physically active, you're not going to tire yourself out. But the screen time is a hard one. But I always tell people, like, if you turn off your screen, that's the time to set up your routine, that nightly routine. Also, check in with the kids. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody, we have a time where all electronics are off. And it's usually before dinner. And then everyone's in. You know, that's family time at that point. Sorry, you're stuck with us, right?
I love it. That's so healthy. Tell me about, well, real quick, and then we need to wrap up. So duration of sleep, I find myself as I'm aging that I don't necessarily feel as though I need as much sleep, and it might be because of my training regimen, but I'm kind of okay with I function really good with 7. I'm okay at 6.5, and I'm really good at 8. But 7's always like, if I get 7, I'm golden, I think. But what is your theory on or your philosophy on duration?
I think the perfect day is 7 to 8 and a little bit of a power nap in your natural low. Usually everybody has a low through the day. And that's a good time to do mundane tasks, but it's also a good time to just relax, close your eyes, and take a 20-minute little power nap. If you're doing that, you're in good shape. If you're young, if you're an athlete who's trying to perform, you need 10. Mm-hmm. No excuses. Like if I get somebody in here and they're like, I want to put on weight, I want to put on mass, I'm like, you got to do 10 hours of sleep. And they're like, I can't do it. I'm like, then it's not important. That is a requirement. Like, don't tell me you want something unless you're going to be able to do the actions that support that goal.
Yes. Okay. Well, so I want to finish up with some rapid fire questions. We're totally out of time. This could go on and on for me. I love this. So you have one meal. You can pig out with absolutely no recourse. What is it?
Oof. It'd be between just some real good Tex-Mex and pizza. Man, I love pizza.
Gosh.
Yeah. Either one of those. I probably go Tex-Mex because I could just load up on chips and salsa. Like, I mean, you can always eat that.
I
don't care if it's after Thanksgiving dinner. They come back with chips and salsa. Yeah. Yeah. Right here. Let's go.
Well, there's a restaurant in town called Macero, and they bring the chips out in this little bitty cup. I thought I was being punked. I looked around for a camera. I'm like, surely the first time I went to that restaurant, I'm like, surely they're joking here. Cause I mean, they brought it. Have you seen it? It's a little bitty metal cup
with the three little salsas, right?
Yeah,
I'm like, you might as well just bring, like, is this mine? Like, No, this is for the table. Yeah, you're gonna have to bring more.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so how many push-ups can you do in a row?
Nonstop.
Yeah.
Probably right now in the mid 30s. 50 used to be my standard, but I'm a little off that training right now.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I thought it would be a lot more. I was kind of like, and you're probably doing very strict, proper push-ups, which are very different than the little pumpers that I see people doing.
Tempo, chest touches all the way down, arms lock out at the top.
Yeah, those are legit. Yeah.
Makes a big difference.
Chest touch the ground.
Probably 100 pumpers.
The pumpers. I love it. Yeah. Okay. Favorite post-workout meal?
I'm pretty simple. I love if you've ever had a Sumo orange, they're fantastic. They come out once a year in a protein shake. But I usually do an apple and a protein shake. I'm not hungry after a big workout.
Okay. For morning, oatmeal or eggs?
Eggs.
For sure, right? Because you get that glycemic hit from oatmeal. It's terrible, isn't it?
Yeah. Let's go protein. I mean, come on. You're going to be fine, especially before a workout.
Okay. It's 20.
There's that myth going on right there.
Which part? Point it out.
That oatmeal is going to give you this huge glycemic spike.
Oh, it's not true?
No, I mean, you've got grains in there too. You got fiber, so that helps with that.
So it's okay.
Now, if you were doing some boxed cereal, for sure.
Okay.
An oatmeal, you'd be fine. Throw some protein in there, you're good to go.
Okay.
Collagen
for me. Okay, so it's 2011. You got a baby on the ground. You just jumped ship from Lockheed Martin. You got a nervous wife. What do you whisper in your 30-year-old ear?
Hire the right people.
Do you think you would have listened?
Yeah.
Okay.
I definitely would have. Good. For sure.
And so I reached out to a few of your tribe members and just said, hey, what do I ask Lee? What do I ask Lee? Here was my favorite question. It was, his wife, Isis, can kick his ass. I wonder if he ever worries about it.
Well, there was a time. Yes. I'll never forget one time I was overhead squatting, which is a weak lift for me. And she's like, I'm going to try that weight. How much is it? And so I tell her and she just lifts it. And that was the last time that ever happened. That was probably 2012.
I don't know. Yeah.
It's hilarious. Oh, I was just, there's nothing more infuriating. I was just like, oh, okay. Okay. How am I supposed to protect you when you're squatting more than I am? So yeah,
that was
the last time that happened.
You're never going to let that happen again. Well, so my last and final question, do you have a cheat day?
I don't label anything a cheat day or cheat meal, but yeah, for sure. I love good food. And so that's one thing, if I take things out, I'm going to crave it. And so a lot of moderation, and I know it's coming around again, and I know what food affects me, and I know how I'm going to feel the next day. But you make decisions, and once you figure out, the effects, you have to live with that. Everything has a cost. So if I want a cheat meal, absolutely.
Awesome.
But that means I'm probably going to be eating better that next day.
That's right. Well, Lee, your heart in what you do is so obvious to me. And you are making a big impact for a lot of people and their health in this community. Lots and lots of my friends have been deeply impacted by the community and the family that you've built. What a great interview, and I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with me and to teach me and to coach me. Do you have any parting thoughts?
Other than just go out there, guys, have fun with fitness, make sure you're moving. Don't neglect strength training and eat close to nature. Simple.
I love that. Well, thank you very much, Lee. It's been great.
Thank you.
Well, folks, that wraps up our show for this week. If you found this interview helpful and would like to get pearls of wisdom that I've gathered along the way, go to truegritpodcast.com and subscribe to the True Grit blog. You will get short, helpful emails written by yours truly. Included in these posts, you will also get the show notes with links to books, articles, and other cool things I run across. Thanks, as always, for listening to the True Grit Podcast, where we believe that personal growth and helping each other solve important problems is the best way to make the world a better place. And don't forget, building a company and a life of meaning takes true grit.